Hey everybody, and welcome along to this week's edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast, brought to you as always in association with KPMG. Peter Finnan here, and joined by John Craven. How are you, John?
How you going, Pete?
Yeah, all good. As we said in the podcast, we've actually joined by another guest this week as well. We're delighted to be joined by Niall Kearney. How are you, Niall?
Hi guys, great to be here. Yep.
The last couple of weeks have been tough watching the golf, I'd say.
Yeah, the last couple of months, really, Pete. Yeah. I think out of the last 7-8 tournaments, they only got a single start. So it's been a little bit disappointing sitting at home watching it.
Have you been watching it?
I have, of course, yeah. I've been sort of keeping an eye on, you know, Race to Dubai rankings and all that sort of stuff, just to sort of see where I was going to end up and, you know, what sort of category I'm going to have going into 2022.
Is it a year to celebrate? It's like it's a tough way to end a good season, like on the bench as such.
Yeah, it is. You know, it started very strong. I was getting a lot of starts, and I sort of probably a little bit complacent in terms of I felt as though I was going to just keep going and getting more and more starts, but it just didn't materialize that way. But yeah, it's certainly a celebration. You know, a lot of my stats were very, very strong this year, stroke average and stuff like that, and I ended up finishing 133rd in terms of the Race to Dubai. The top 1-2-1 ended up getting cards, so I missed out by about 12 spots. But you know, I'm still going to have a really good status going into next year, and should get plenty of starts and hopefully keep the run of form going.
It is just game time, isn't it? Like David Drysdale snuck in at 1-2-2 from 30 starts. You were 1-3-3 from 15.
Yeah, it was. It was just starts. You know, I got off to a great start down in Tenerife earlier in the year. Finished top four, top five. Loads of points out of it and sort of got myself up and running. Sort of felt as though going into the start of the year, I was going to split the season between Challenge Tour and Main Tour. And certainly the early part of the year, I just kept getting Main Tour starts and, you know, just kept going and going. So I said, why not sort of stick to Main Tour here, see if we can get 15, 20 starts and, you know, get ourselves a decent card out of it. So early part of the year and mid-season, things were going really well in terms of starts, and then it just totally dried up at the back end.
How frustrating is it? So Portugal comes around and you know that if you get a start, there's a really good chance you're going to wrap up your card, and it's just, you're just sitting there waiting and it's not coming.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult, yeah. You know, I was in category 22 this year, which is quite a low category. And so I knew coming into the back end of the season, loads of guys are going to be playing, trying to, you know, keep their cards and all that sort of stuff. So I was always going to need a couple of invites, and I just found it really difficult to get the invites across the line, whether I was playing the right game or not. It's hard to know. I was, you know, sending emails and all that sort of stuff, but it's not...
Like, you shouldn't have to bang down doors to get into golf tournaments like that.
Yeah, especially,
based,
you know,
off your form.
I felt as though I had a really genuine case.
Yeah.
You know, I've been trying to get a Main Tour card for 10 years now, or 12 years, and, you know, I had a great opportunity this year, and it just didn't happen in terms of getting the last couple of starts. But, you know, still being a, you know, very positive season, going to have decent status going into next year, and I just need to keep going.
It's just the way they go about it, because we followed up, like, we chased them as well here, saying, what's the story with this, what's the story with that, how is this selection process going? And they were more of the opinion of, the guys that are already in, we're kind of giving them the invoice just to try and get them to maintain their stuff. Mm. And I was like, but sure, he was in 3 weeks ago, and the reason he's not in now is because... you didn't let him in 2 weeks ago, or you didn't let him into this one.
Yeah.
I know it all goes on status and rankings and stuff, but some of the, like, I know you hate pointing at other players that are in the field because you're all trying for the same thing, but it just didn't seem fair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult one. You know, the tour seemed to have so many guys to choose from, certainly the last two or three tournaments. So what they did was they actually didn't bother giving out any invites at all. They just gave it back to the field, which was fair in my opinion. You know, so first reserve got in, second reserve got in, rather than giving, you know, a couple of invites out. So that was fair. But, you know, unfortunately with sort of 6, 7, 8 tournaments to go, I just couldn't seem to get a couple of invites just to get me across the line. So yeah, it was disappointing.
Is this why Frontier Management got involved in it? Is that one of the reasons why you got involved with the management company, is to try and help you with that going forward?
Yeah. Yeah, I felt as though I needed somebody working on, you know...
Lobbying
for me and sort of pushing for me and, you know, trying to get a couple of starts when I'm maybe struggling to get starts. You know, I still don't know what the set criteria is in terms of trying to get an invite. I don't think there is a criteria. And so, therefore, I just need somebody fighting my corner all the time. And so, therefore, Frontier Sports came on board, which has been great.
Is that almost like writing a cover letter for a job application kind of thing? Like trying to see what I have to put in this to get an invite? Like,
yeah, it's very hard to know. You know, you send invites or, sorry, emails off to, obviously,
tournament directors and stuff.
Tournament directors, sponsors, head of invites, European Tour, people that could be associated with that tournament, all that sort of stuff. Sometimes they get back to you, sometimes they don't.
And that's disheartening in itself. Sometimes they don't even reply.
Yeah, of course it is. But it's just, you know, that just seems to be the game, you know.
How about Mallorca then? Miscut there. That was after, I think you played the Dutch Open probably 4 or 5 weeks before that or something. Like, how hard is it to tee up in Mallorca, knowing that you have to perform, but being kind of 4 or 5 weeks out of competitive practice?
Yeah, it was difficult. We were in Holland. I played really well, actually, and I finished just outside the top 10, and I finished on the Sunday with a couple of bogeys, which sort of dropped me a few spots. And but that was obviously a positive week, and I certainly didn't think when we were flying out of Holland that it was going to be 4 or 5 weeks before we got another start. And so obviously I was trying my best here at home to keep myself sharp, whether it was down in my own studio or playing golf and trying to play some sort of competitive golf at home. But it's very difficult to try and create the same feelings, you know, the same juices, the same pressure and stuff like that. So yeah, I then, you know, went to Spain, didn't play great, missed the cup by a single shot, which was obviously disappointing. But yeah, again, when we were flying out of there, I thought I might have squeezed another start in as well. So yeah, it's just the way it worked out.
It's a head scramble. Like, the whole year was kind of like that. Like, as you said, you went into it thinking you're going to be splitting your schedule over Challenge Tour. And Spain was kind of the start of that run of events where I think you were over with your dad and you weren't even expecting to be out there, and you didn't even have clothes to be out there for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, how hard is that logistically to kind of just be on the hop, basically?
Yeah, pretty much all season we were on the hop. COVID was positive for us. That obviously sounds very selfish, you know. Lots of people going through, you know, desperate times with COVID and stuff like that. But from a playing point of view, COVID was positive for me because
it opened doors. It did open.
Yeah, it opened doors, and there was lots of guys, lots of players sitting, you know, whether they were in India or Australia and stuff like that, and just couldn't get to Europe to actually play the event. So entry lists fell down the category list, down into category, you know, 20, 21, 22 quite often. So that's how I've ended up getting, you know, 14 or 15 starts, and so that's been positive. But I suppose, based on the fact that you're constantly looking at the category list and entry list and stuff like that, you're all the time sort of, am I going to get into next week? Yeah. You know, are we going to get 2 weeks out of this? Are we going to get 3 weeks? I think twice during the season we ended up doing 2 5-week runs. Probably wouldn't do it by choice, but you know, we were just forced into doing it.
Yeah, just take the starts when you can.
Yeah,
you can kind of, yeah, beggars can't be choosers, kind of thing.
It's good when you're on the road, you remarked on Wee there, you have your dad on the bike.
Mm.
It's good to have that, like, family company there when you're on those stints as well, and just going, I know you're a very close family.
Mm.
And how good is that to share those experiences that you had with him this year, though?
Ah, it was brilliant. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Knowing what he's priceless. Invested in your game over the years.
Yeah, of course. No, it's priceless. And that's actually a really good caddy as well. You know, it's not just for sort of company's sake. And but yeah, COVID was obviously difficult this year in terms of the flexibility I had, you know, at each tournament venue. You know, out of the 15 weeks that I played, there were certainly 8 weeks or 9 weeks where you couldn't actually leave your hotel. And so therefore, there was lots of spare time. There was lots of time where you were looking for some sort of, you know, engaging conversation just to sort of pass the time. So, yeah, it's great to have somebody there that, you know, that was close, and you could go and have, you know, a nice bit of tea and bit of a chat and stuff like that.
Does that drive you to the range? Are you a bit of a range rat then? You'd like to?
Not really when I'm at a tournament. No, I'm not really a post-game range guy. You know, sort of, you know, I like to get back to the hotel, get to the gym, have a, you know, a bit of a stretch and rest, really, yeah.
Would you try and not chat golf with your dad after a round, say, so you're going to evening meal or whatever?
Yeah, we certainly try our best. Yeah,
but talk
about something else.
Does it go back there?
It does, of course. It always does.
Yeah,
it always does. And you know, what's going to be the plan tomorrow? What about this today? Can we change that tomorrow? And, you know, like it's all very constructive chat, really. You know, it's good.
I'm a big fan of the kind of player caddy chats when you get a hot mic or whatever, and you can kind of peel back the curtain of what goes on. What would it kind of be like between you and Joe? Do you ever get not heated, but
no, it's all pretty short and sweet. You know, I don't like too much chat. I don't like too much talk about trouble or whether it's something on the left or something on the right. You know, like I always try and keep the chat. Where do we want the ball to go rather than what's left or what's right? You know, so just to try and emphasize this is where we want it to go, right half of the green, rather than saying let's not hit it left here. It's much more so let's just bang it at that tree.
We shouldn't be talking about this, Dad. We shouldn't be talking
about
this.
Exactly.
Has he ever stepped in and overruled you? Have you ever given a pass right? Yeah, no, that was the right call. Yeah, you stood up.
No. Well, yeah. You know, like there are numerous times during the year when I'm possibly pulling the wrong club, you know, so that just, you know, like it would open up a conversation whereby, what about this? You know, I think the wind is at 10 o'clock or whatever. I think, you know, let's just go one more sort of thing, like, you know, so no, there's lots of that, yeah.
And how important going into this season, like it's an expensive hobby for most people. It's an expensive way to make a living. Mm. How important was this season to be profitable on the course to you in your sort of career? I know it's not about the money, it's about the points and stuff like that, but how important of a season was it to you? Like you're a long way into your professional career now.
Yeah.
And to try and turn a profit and actually get that self-belief back that this is what I need to be doing.
Yeah, of course. You know, I turned pro back in 2009 after Walker Cup, and you could possibly say I haven't had a really lucrative year since. I've been sort of grinding the whole time, whether it's on Challenge Tour or it's on Asian Tour or Euro Pro Tour. I've played lots of different tours. And so, yeah, this year was obviously great to get the main tour starts, get some decent checks, give myself a little bit of comfort going into next season. Obviously, still searching for sponsorship and, you know, guys to come on board going into next season and stuff like that. You know, like it is massively expensive from a travel point of view, you know, taking on a caddy possibly going into next year, staying in decent hotels, all that sort of stuff. Coaching. And so yeah.
And how sustainable beforehand? Like you look at I know a lot of golfers that look at their overall careers, like balance sheets every year and stuff like that. And it's like it does become a time where in your own head you start to question things. Oh, what am I doing here? Am I doing the right thing? Am I chasing something that these doors I've knocked on them for so long? Like you were relentless.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a slog in the Euro Pro, like this is what I'm trying to get at.
Euro Pro is a slog, yeah. I suppose, you know, like I never lost the love for playing. And I always loved being in the space of card in hand, tournament situation, bit of pressure. I'd miss that. You know, if that wasn't going on, it didn't matter if it was on, you know, Challenge Tour, Euro Pro Tour. Once there was a tour that I could play where I could get into that environment, I just really loved that sort of scenario. So I suppose that's what drove me to keep going. Obviously, I had massive help from family and, you know, external people and stuff like that, which has been sort of crucial, you know, because, you know, like if we were being honest, lots of guys have to stop playing simply because they run out of money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the unfortunate reality of it. And so I was blessed to have the opportunity to keep going, but also I loved doing what I was doing, even though I wasn't making really great waves, you know, especially during the sort of teen years. But it just, you know, I felt as though my game was getting better each year, and I just felt as though I could have broken through, like, you know, so it's starting to happen now, which is good.
Because there were some tough times. There were, like, it's probably the most difficult interview I have ever done with a golfer was with you. For me.
Yeah.
The difficult one. And you'll remember it, like, in walking up the last until Faris, you doubled the last. Yeah. Like, you were going to win the tournament. Pulled the wrong club, snapped it a bit left, and, literally walked off, like, from... And I know, like, at that time, status, 10 grand, getting one of the top five cards was massive at the time. And you walked off the 18th, missed the playoff by a shot in Everton after a card and a double. And I walked after you and caught up with you in the car park, and like, it was tough. I'm sure, I don't know, like, I can only imagine how tough it was for you.
Yeah,
but like,
shocking.
To have to ask you questions like about what just happened, and like, your mind is just blurred.
Yeah. Yeah, shocking time. You know, there's been lots of that over the last 10 or 15 years, Peter, you know. But yeah, that would have been particularly difficult. Obviously, chasing a maiden sort of Euro Pro Tour win. Great opportunity. Generally, you know, I had the hard work done. Hit a smashing drive up there. I think it was hitting 7 iron in, yeah. six iron in, 7 iron, back right pin. Pulled it a little bit left. Got a kind of a bad lie. It wasn't that bad. Sort of a, you know, a poor enough chip to about 20 feet and, you know, a 3-putter from there. And just it's hard to say whether it's the pressure of the, you know, the overall occasion or just the overall space that I was in at that time. You know, I was on the Euro Pro Tour. I didn't necessarily want to be there. I'm trying so hard to get off it, you know, and just possibly trying a little bit too hard. And so you go from having that winning opportunity and having the thoughts of winning to finishing, I think I ended up finishing tied fourth,
yeah,
with that double bogey. So it's sort of, it's just,
you probably, you were lucky to cover your expenses for the,
yeah,
week,
totally,
with a tied fourth finish. That's
totally,
that's,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the hard, like, all I'm trying to get is like it, those drives home from that event, like you've had a few of them. Did you ever get the feeling of, I just want to pull the plug on this, like, you know, at those times when you're coming out, you're just like,
yeah I don't know, I just, I always, and I said this somewhere else going back a few years, I just get to bed, wake up the next day, all I want to do is go back practicing again. And so, you know, I don't know why that happens, but it's just, that's just in me. And even though it's massively difficult time, not only for me, for family and parents and all the rest that are trying so hard for me as well. And so just to have those difficult times, and then, but just to actually get up the next day and say, well, okay, let's get back to the practice area and let's just drive on, you know. So there's been so many times like that over the last 10 years. So it's just in me, you know.
Whatever about like that finish at Tulferris, talk about like the 61 of Canaries. Like, are you, what's different about you that suddenly you can do that in a final round of the European Tour event?
Yeah, well, I couldn't always do that. You know, I suppose it's quite important to say that. There was times, especially in the early years, as you know, as a pro, that I struggled to go low. You know, I'd sort of get 3-4 under par in any given round, and I'd struggle to go deeper than that. It just wasn't comfortable going there. And so, I suppose playing challenge tour mainly for sort of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years starting out, and you suddenly realize, well, Jesus, you know, like, I've got to get to 20 under par here to have a decent week. It breaks down the barrier over time. Where you say, I've got to just take off the shackles here. I've got to just keep going. And so that was, you know, shooting 61 down in that Tenerife tournament. That was like a 10-year training process in order to make that happen. And so just to have the free will, just the freedom to say, well, you know, let's just keep going, you know, driving on, taking on the shots, rather than having the fear of slipping back and making a bogey or making a double. It's to actually just that freedom of just actually letting it go.
You know? Fear 59.
Yeah, you see, I was finishing, you know, I started that fourth round, I think I was more so the middle of the pack. So I actually started on T10,
yeah,
rather than T1. So I was finishing on the front nine, which was the more difficult finish. So it was always going to be difficult to sort of finish birdie. But
but the camera started to appear then halfway through your back nine, and you've...
Camera started appearing again. That's all part of the training apprenticeship, you know. That all happens out on Challenge Tour. It happens out on Euro Pro Tour. You just slowly get used to it. It's not easy early doors, of course it's not. You know, everybody gets, you know, a little bit jumpy and stuff like that. But yeah, no, it's...
But good. What clicked mentally then with you? Say you post that 61... Is that like you've broken down a barrier that you thought was mentally in the back of your head about going that low sometimes? Or was that more earlier in your career?
That was more the early years, I think.
The transition period, like,
yeah,
into the pro game.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I always felt the amateur game, it was on really tough, difficult courses. The weather generally was poor. So, you know, you're sort of shooting level par, one under, two under, and that's sort of generally a strong score. And then suddenly you're landed out on Challenge Tour somewhere in the centre of Europe. The weather's perfect. The greens are perfect. And suddenly...
70s are useless.
So, yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah. Exactly. And so so it's just trying to, it was just trying to get used to shooting. I've got to go 500-600 a day here. That's where the standard is at here, and that's where we got to get to.
So you really have to readjust your whole outlook on the game and that transition from like the amateur status that we have here in sort of GB and I, and you get onto it. Like that transition period is tough just to get that, because I know of guys that, I don't know who it was, it might have been Conor O'Rourke or one of them when he turned pro, and he was just told, go and play like the red tees on courses and get used to getting like 5, 6, 7 under par as much as you can.
Yeah, you've got to get the mindset. You know, personally, I really, you know, like if I was looking back now, I'd say I didn't have the low scoring mindset early enough in my pro career. I didn't have the comfort level with it. So playing off ladies tees, shorter courses, getting that mindset of shooting 5, 6, 7 under par, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like birdie in the first, and I just shit myself straight away. It's like, oh, you have to protect it. I'm one under now. This is me. but no, you clearly got that confidence. Even Hero Open, you were 66, 66. Does it progressively then just get easier? Like you feel comfortable?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah, of course. Now, obviously, technically, you know, I've been in a good spot now the last sort of couple of seasons as well. So it's not all mental. You've got to have the sort of physical capability to do it as well. So. That's been great. Eddie Doyle has been really positive for me down to Heritage. He's put in so much work and so many hours, and you know, like lots of what has happened this year is due to him. You know?
Technique or mindset or both?
A little bit of both. Mainly the physical stuff and technical stuff. Yeah. Where I feel as though I can go and play now, even if I'm playing poorly, I'm still going to give myself a shot at doing decent, which is obviously great. You know, everybody's good is good, but everybody's bad is not that good.
You seem to have a really good understanding, though, of your game, your makeup, your sort of DNA. You're into equipment as well and stuff like that. Like, does that make it harder sometimes with coaches to let people in and not tinker with what you're doing, but, like, listen and properly take it on board with a coach when you're very in tune with where you are at your game?
Yeah, I think it probably makes it a bit more difficult. I think knowing a little bit about it can be a detriment, you know, at times, because you're always questioning then. And so from a sort of a club's point of view, you know, I'm big into sort of building my own clubs and stuff like that, and it's like OCD, you know, got to get them perfect. The swing weights have to match up. Everything has to be perfect.
So nobody touches Niall Kearney's clubs?
No, I tend to, you know, like if I'm shipped in a set of clubs, I just take them apart, get them into my own workshop, check it all out, clean it all out, get them all swing weighted properly and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's very enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's massively enjoyable. But yeah, I just have that little bit in me, yeah. And, yeah.
That has to be an advantage, surely, having that kind of depth of interest. A lot of golfers wouldn't think like that at all.
No, I suppose once I get them right, then it gives me great confidence.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a double whammy, really.
Yeah.
Technically, you know, like I would probably call myself a student of the game. You know, I've read everything really about it, and sort of, you know, I'm big into reading coaching books and, you know, technical books and all that sort of stuff. So, but that can be dangerous as well at times. You know, when you're playing and trying to play and trying to score, having that little bit of knowledge can be detrimental, you know, as well.
Do you take any inspiration from, like, some of the breakthrough stories this year, like Johnny Caldwell, Richard Bland, those kind of things? Can you identify with that and be like, yeah, that's going to be me kind of thing?
Well, yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, Johnny's obviously had a massive breakthrough this year, which is great. You know, I've travelled sort of on and off with Johnny, you know, over the last 10 years. And just to see him go from sort of main tour card early out, then he was back on Euro Pro, then I think he did a little bit of challenge tour. Now he's back on main tour and got a win. So he's got a really good category going into next season. So, you know, like, it's great to see guys sticking it out, even though there's been really difficult times, just to keep going and keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we back our own as much as we should? Like, from a, not to ask an awkward question around like funding in golf, but like the Team Ireland side, we've remarked on the podcast and on different articles this year that guys in your situation that literally are so close to maintaining a full European tour card, and for sponsors, be it Folge Ireland, Tourism Ireland, Golf Ireland, they should really have something in reserve to throw at pro golfers, no matter if they're in or out of the Team Ireland fold. If you're flying under the Irish flag and you've came through the system, that they are knocking down the door to get more starts, because that's what we're all in the game of. Like, a full European Tour card for you is a full European Tour card for Ireland.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
Do you find that tough, that from a governance point of view, that when you leave the, like, that transition from the amateur game, it's forgotten about?
Yeah, like, it's, you know, it's a difficult space to talk about, really.
I'm not trying to get you to be critical about anyone. It's just from you as a player.
Yeah.
It's a tough space to... You're kind of on your own. I know professional golf, you are on your own, but, like, it would be nice if sponsors and stuff like that of these big events actually took a bit more notice.
Yeah, it certainly would. You know, if I was talking about Team Ireland, Team Ireland was obviously a massive positive. You know, I turned pro in 2009. I got funding straight away, and I got it for a 6-year period, which was massively beneficial at that time. When you're playing mini tours, and it's still very, very costly. You know, so I had access to the Irish Institute of Sport. I had access to funding, which was great, and that obviously still goes on with guys that are, you know, making that move now from amateur to pro. So that's obviously very important. From a sort of a sponsors and getting access to a tournament point of view, I think that's just a dark space at the moment, based on the fact that there doesn't seem to be a criteria. So if there's no criteria, you know, like, there, you know, it's just very difficult to know how it all works.
It's a grey area.
You know, yeah.
Politically, there's a lot going on in golf at the moment, and it's kind of leading into that sort of grey areas. There seems to be a lot more opportunity, and there's a lot of debate around sponsors and, you know, who's getting involved in running these tours, and we won't get into a political debate, definitely not with John Craven here beside me. But it's a with someone that has dabbled in the Asian Tour successfully in the past, do you look at these growing tours sort of stripping away that sort of grey area you're remarking about access to the top end of the tours? The Asian Tour growing and getting more funds, more sponsors, that's a massive positive.
Yeah, of course it is. I suppose competition is healthy anywhere. And so it's going to be interesting to see what the access is in terms of the Asian Tour, because obviously there are Asian Tour guys now that currently hold cards that, you know, essentially haven't really played over the last 2 years. So they've got to be honoured first. And then after that, I can see them having some sort of tour school scenario or something like that going forward. And then obviously it's branching into Saudi as well. And I think there was possibly something about the MENA tour joining up as well. So it's going to be a sort of a Middle Eastern Asian tour. It's going to be strong. Yeah.
It's something you'd consider. You've done it before.
Yeah, I've done it. I've done it out there before. I really enjoyed it. You know, fabulous part of the world. The tournaments were excellent. They were really super tournaments. You know, they always attracted somebody like a Garcia, and, you know, Ernie Els and all these guys were out there playing. You know, so it was a really strong place to be sort of learning. And so, yeah, you know, like, I certainly wouldn't rule it out, but ideally, you know, I'd like to play Europe again during the sort of 2022 season, and then, you know, see where we're at then.
And the new DP World sponsorship, for a player of your category and your status, how do you think this is going to impact you in 2022 with, like, the prize funds bolstering? Do you think it's going to make it harder for you to get into events?
Well, I think, you know, the schedule came out there last week, and there's 47 weeks on it. So, you know, I think everybody's going to get a fair share of tournaments based on the fact that there's so many. From a sort of a title sponsor coming in the DP World, I think it's only positive. You know, there's obviously there's co-sanctioned events coming up now in the next few weeks down in South Africa with the Sunshine Tour. There are more co-sanctioned events then during the year with the PGA Tour. So it seems to be getting a bit broader, a bit meatier in terms of the in terms of the schedule. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Have you improved your status now? Do you know that yet?
Yeah, so I've gone from, I was in category 22 this year, which is basically a tour school category, making the quote and final stage, but just missing out on the main tour card. So now I'm going into category 18, which is just missing a full card in terms of order of merit.
Yeah.
Place. So obviously the top 1-2-1 got their main tour card. So I was 1-3-3. So I think category 18 caters for
20 guys after 15, I think it's 15
or 20 guys,
yeah.
Outside of just getting
so that's really positive.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's positive. Yeah. So yeah, category 18 should be, you know, based on the fact that there are 47 weeks going into next year, it should be positive for me, you know.
Are you targeting like 20 weeks would be the goal for you, would it?
Yeah, well, actually, today is going to sort of tell a lot because everybody's going to be shuffled into brand new categories today based on the fact that 2021 effectively finished last night over in Dubai. So yeah, everybody will see where they're at today. And entry list for Joburg, which is starting Thursday week, is coming out today as well. So based off that, you'll sort of get an indication of how your general 2022 season is going to look.
Would that be your plan to get to South Africa if you could?
Yeah, I think I'd go, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So obviously there's 3 weeks down there. Ideally, I'd like to get 3 weeks. Two out of three would be obviously second best. And then
when were you there last?
I was there for Challenge Tour events. Oh, it's going back 2 or 3 years. Yeah, I did 3 weeks there. First week was up in Limpopo, then we were in Cape Town, then we were in Fancourt for the third one, so that was a nice stretch. But, you know, it's always a difficult place to go. You know, the standard of golf down there is always really high. Sunshine Tour is very, very strong. You know, you've got lots of local guys, different grasses, all that sort of stuff. And they're actually coming towards the end of their Sunshine Tour season, whereas we'd be just starting out our 2022 season. So it's sort of it's always an awkward time, difficult place to go. Yeah, I remember first turn pro in 2009, and I got an invite down to the Joburg Open, which was at the start of 2010, and it was on down in Kensington, east and west course. And actually played really, really nice. I think it was five under Thursday, Friday. It's like perfect, you know, first time out, great. And I think the cut went to 6 or 7 under, missed the cut. And you're sort of like, Jesus, this is where it's at.
Baptism of fire.
I sort of felt as though I played my best to get to 5 under, you know, so yeah.
It'd be a nice off-course experience, I'd imagine, as well. And nice to get away from the Irish winter for a bit. You'd be doing that anyway.
Yeah, I'd certainly have to possibly look at doing something anyway in terms of getting away. But, you know, like, I've been at home now the last few weeks. The weather has been really, really, really kind. And getting to play loads of golf. And, it's been okay, you know.
What do you think about this DP World this week, the Tour Championship? The likes of Ram not playing, Justin Rose isn't playing, Hovland's not playing. Special permissions. I don't know, what's it like as a member when you see lads that you think should be...
Yeah, well, we were getting emails all the way through the week now, because obviously the mark was changing all the time. And obviously it's top 50, but I think it ended up being the top 54, wasn't it? So obviously it was keeping an eye on Harrington. You know, he gave it a great push there as well.
Yeah,
I think he birdied the last to get to
Did you see
53rd.
The up and down? Did you see the up and down?
Yeah, he held from about 20 feet, was it?
Yeah, that was proper.
Fabulous.
Well, you think the system then. So how does Harrington go, like, ties 8th and he drops a place? I don't get it as a layman. I don't understand how it happens.
Yeah, so obviously guys that were possibly sitting just underneath him in terms of the race to Dubai went out and finished better than him last week, and so obviously gained more points and jumped past him, you know. So yeah. No, it's a complex system. But it's a pity he's not there, because, you know, like, he was giving it a good try now the last few weeks.
Has he been helpful to you throughout your career, or any, like, the Irish guys? Has Paddy been?
Yeah, I don't really know, Pork. Yeah, I don't really know, I'm being honest. I'd have to say Paul McGinley has been the most helpful, I have to say, and really good to sort of talk to and get some sort of tour advice and all that sort of stuff, and help with how to possibly get invites and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, very, very helpful.
Helpful with everything bar invites.
Yeah, well, it's difficult. It's difficult, yeah.
And looking at the schedule, I know you spoke about the schedule, Mount Juliet next year for the Irish Open. Kind of a week that got away from you this season. What are your thoughts on the Irish Open as an event and how it's, I'm not going to say it's stepped backwards in the last few years, but it definitely has taken a bit more of a back seat than the spectacle we had, like Lahinch and Port Stewart and places like that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I remember. I remember playing the Irish Open when it was at Portrush. And that was just a brilliant week. You know, the atmosphere and all that sort of stuff. But no, like, the Irish Open this year, down at Mount Juliet, was actually a big event in terms of the overall schedule based
double
on the European.
Yeah,
it was double prize fund, double points and all that sort of stuff. So it was a massive tournament, yeah. So, I was obviously massively disappointed to go there. I think I think I missed a cup by a shot or two, maybe something like that. It was tight enough. And obviously, based on the context of my season where I had limited starts, I knew that was going to be a crucial week because there was double points on offer. And so, you know, again, possibly fell into a space where I was possibly trying a little bit too hard. But I mean, the fact it's going back there, it's a really, you know, it's a fabulous test of golf. You know, it's a beautiful golf course, lovely area. And
you just can't see the sea from it.
You can't see.
You know where I'm going.
I know
with
what you're trying to
you
say.
You know what I'm trying to say. I know you're not going to say it like that, but it should be on a links golf course. Like, you know, when it's in that place in the schedule, I don't think it's going to make a difference to the field. It'll probably be a positive to the field.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, it could possibly be. Scotland has obviously come out and they've been on. You know, they've got a great spot within the sort of schedule in the calendar year. Put on a links course and managed to, you know, attract massive fields. You know, which is, you know, which has been positive. Yeah, you know, it's difficult for me today. You know, should it be on a links? Should it be on a parkland? It's hard to know.
Yeah.
He's a true pro, this fella. There's no getting nothing out of him.
No, it's just the only reason I keep saying this because, like, yeah, Scotland have a great tournament and it's a great event, but, like, Renaissance, it's not links. It's like it's half links. It's semi. Like, you're going to play Royal Dublin today. That's a proper golf course.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know?
It is. Yeah. And, you know, I played the Island the other day. I played Port Marnock the other day. You know, they're all fabulous links courses. Mm. Of course they are. And so maybe there's more to it. Maybe it's difficult to get these golf courses to host Irish Opens, you know.
$6 million this year though as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a massive event. It's really good to see that. It's positive. And yeah, it seems to be going up. Obviously, you know, there seems to be a little bit of a PGA Tour influence coming into the European Tour as well. Which is only going to be positive, I think.
So for you going forward then, you might have a couple of weeks off. You don't know yet until the South African stuff comes out and how long you're going to have off. How do you stay sharp, or what do you... I know you've your own setup at home now. It's your GC quads in your swing rooms and you're working on clubs. And how do you keep sharp in these times?
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, like, it's difficult to just, you know, get the same juices going, even if you're playing a casual game, whether it's with pros or it's with amateurs. You know, it's trying to create the same environment, which is, it's pretty much impossible. But it's just trying to go through practice routines, putting in the hours, doing the reps, any sort of technical work that needs to be cleaned off. This is the perfect time to do it. So, you know, it's all that sort of cleaning up stuff that I'm doing now going into next season.
Are you a man for writing down goals?
Not really much of a goal setter, whether it's right or wrong. It's much more sort of taking a block of tournaments, and, you know, I probably would have goals without realizing it. I probably do have daily goals without writing them down.
So looking into next year then, like, people gauge success in different ways. Some people look at money, some people look at trophies, some people look at different achievements. What is success for Niall Kearney looking into 2022?
I think I'd like to keep my stats strong going into 2022, because I think that leads to a much more process driven approach rather than looking at finishes and scores and all that sort of stuff. If I can just stay on top of my stats in terms of greens and regulation, in terms of stroke average, in terms of all that process driven stuff. And then obviously, hopefully decent finishes fall out of the back of that. You know, that'd be my sort of thought process on it.
So when you dissect 2021, is that what you look at? You look at the stats and the different areas of your game, right? This is an area I need to look at a little bit more, and this will kick me on naturally.
Yeah, a little bit of that. There's certainly a couple of areas that I'd like to get a little bit sharper at. I'd like to hold a few more putts from sort of 15, 20 feet. Certainly what I found this year, a lot of the pin positions are difficult out on the main tour. They're sort of three from the right, three from the left. So it's all very tight. Difficult to get at sort of 50-60% of them. So, you know, like, you sort of find yourself 10, 15, 20 feet a lot of the time. Even if you're hitting 15, 16 greens around, you've got to hold some putts. And felt as though I put it pretty okay this year, but feel as though it could be a little bit better.
And are you a shaper of the ball? Do you, like, you know, if you've got, like, it helps if you can hit draw, fade, do whatever, or do you just stick to the one stock?
Naturally, I would have a little bit of a draw. You know, that's what's in my eye. It's what's in my DNA. wouldn't be as comfortable hitting it the other way. Again, it's something that I'd like to sharpen up, and Eddie's always at me. Let's you know, get the ball falling right. So yeah, we're constantly sort of challenging that, and so yeah, back left pin this year was obviously no issue. Back right was you know a little bit more difficult for me. So yeah, it's something to target.
I'm looking at your stats. I thought you were a big driver of golf ball, and I do consider you a big driver of golf ball before I offend you, but 140th ranked in the European Tour. Lads are just bombing it. That's insane.
Lads are bombing it, yeah. And, you know, based on the European Tour stats, it's done on a couple of holes a week.
Okay.
And so it can be a little bit misleading. So therefore, if somebody steps up on that hole on that week and...
It suits their eye.
Yeah, it's not even that. And some guys might actually step up and say, you know what, I'm going to hit 2 iron off this week.
Yeah.
And that then affects their driving distance stats.
Very skewed. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not taken on every single hole that you hit driver. It's only done on a set hole or two a week. And, you know, therefore, you know, there's probably really long hitters on that list there that are probably way down based on the fact they just didn't hit driver on that hole on that week. You know,
I'm never going to consult these stats ever again. Total waste of time.
They're basically an irrelevance. No, listen, like, I don't know, John, is there anything else you want to...
No, just, yeah, great to have you in.
Oh, it really is. Like, we've thoroughly enjoyed watching you throughout the season. Like, you really have been a breath of fresh air, and to see you kicking on with your career and long may it continue, we really, we're looking forward to 2022 as much as you are.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for everything. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for coming in. Yeah, so you can catch up with all the latest golf news from the DP World Championship this week and some other bits happening in the amateur game as well still.
Yeah, no, there's plenty going on. But I think Niall said earlier that he's still looking for sponsors. So also just an ad for Niall Carney here. He's a great man. Just bloody get on board. Come on, people. Support your own.
Exactly. No, well, with that, cheers for tuning in, guys. And we'll chat to you again next week. Thank you.